D2, number 12B.
Truth's immortal idea is sweeping down the centuries. Sweeping down the centuries. Says God's idea will eventually rule all nations. God's idea. The whole idea will rule. It brings harmony to earth, again that sense of the level of Christian Science. But then she shows that idea is at once operating on the level of Christian Science and of absolute Christian Science. That's that dynamic sense of being able to overform itself. It has not just one form, idea. Idea is shown as having constantly other forms. The spiritual idea first is clad with the radiance of spiritual truth. That's absolute Christian Science. And matter is put under her feet. Here she gives a wonderful depiction that idea is not something static, that idea as God's idea is something very dynamic, that it constantly changes its function and office, that it is not something atomized, but takes in all the aspects of the whole chart. She says, the workings of the spiritual idea is shown by healing the sick and the sinning, and by manifesting the light which shines unto a perfect day. Can you see how this idea has office, so to say, operational depth by healing the sick, and at the same time operational height by leading unto a perfect day? It is an idea which has power to evolve, to develop, which changes, which mutates, which multimutates, permutates, overforms, which does not stay power. This says, great is the idea, and at the same time the travail is portentous. The material lay made war upon the spiritual idea. And what did that do to the spiritual idea? The spiritual idea, and it impelled the spiritual idea to do what? To rise to the zenith of demonstration. To rise operational height, and at the same time destroying sin, sickness, and death, operational depth, so to say. It is to be caught up unto God, and at the same time, and to be found in its principle. It's an idea of principle, and it's never left principle, and therefore it can never be smaller than principle. Principle cannot be atomized, and then say one of these atoms is an idea. The idea is an idea of principle, and remains an idea of principle, but what is this idea? Just as asking, what is electricity? What is matter? We don't know. It's structure. Electricity is structure. It has definite laws, it has operational power, it has laws. It can be transformed and overformed and and mutated, and I don't know what. And yet we don't know what ideas is, what electricity is. But we get a great concept of idea by all that is involved with electricity. And so here too, it is not the atomized sense of idea which we have to get, but the structural sense of idea. And afterwards, the cybernetic sense of idea, which I show here. I show it here as levels, but at the same time operational in various levels or in various breadths. The idea is something which has not one form. It has constant transmutation of forms. It says that spirit gives the true mental idea. So spirit is transformed into mental idea. She even speaks somewhere of Jesus' idea of matter. So if we hear something about the idea of immortality, that doesn't make immortality idea. Just as Jesus' idea of matter doesn't make matter idea. I think we have to see that clearly, that there was something which needs to be enlarged, very much enlarged. But we don't have to be sorry about what has been going on. All the work we have been doing, that's the way things go. Somewhere we always start with a hypothesis, a working hypothesis, and it may work wonderfully up to a point. Then, in the evolution of the idea, of truth's idea sweeping down the century, there comes a point where there is a transmutation. She says, of this idea, she says, we must get a correct sense of the highest visible idea. The idea is even visible. Can you see that? Idea is so transmutable. Just as we saw this morning, because there is identity, infinite identity, that what is called a tone of a violin, as just a mathematical symbol of vibration, has its identity as sound in the listener's ear, an aesthetical value, on the basis of identity. It changes its form, but it remains, it keeps its identity. Here she speaks of the highest visible idea. We would have said idea is spiritual and therefore not visible. But she says it's visible. These are my authorities on which I talk today. She says that Jesus was the highest human corporeal concept of the divine idea. There is even a corporeal concept of the idea. Therefore, idea must also be conceptually perceived. It just transmutates right down to conceptual thinking. Yes, it must. Or conceptual thinking is outside being, and we have a diverse. There is the principle of identity which says, yes, you can perceive somehow the idea. There is something within you which is able to perceive the idea. The animal may not. The plant may not. But you can. But you can. He speaks about Paul, that to misunderstand Paul was to be ignorant of the divine idea he taught. As if she would equate and say, well, Paul was the divine idea. The teaching of the divine idea. She speaks about Jesus as the impersonization of the spiritual idea. The spiritual idea has an impersonization. It has within itself the faculty of impersonalizing. Yes, why not? It is only another language which we must see, that the invisible idea becomes a visible idea. The incorporeal idea does somehow show itself for that's what she says here, as an impersonization. We said, idea is impersonal. But idea has in itself the quality of impersonization. So can you see, all these things we would have said before too, that an idea has power over illusion, that an idea heals. But the thing is that we begin to see that these functions, these operations, make up idea, and not the concept of a term, like power, law, and so on. We take the concept of idea out of being a single element and be a structure, and see it just structurally. Principle, just to show this dynamic structure, he says, principle is not to be found in fragmentary, is that the right pronunciation, ideas. See, cannot be fragmented. Principle cannot be fragmented. The question is always, did we have an unfragmented concept of those ideas or not? If we had a fragmented sense, it was wrong. If we didn't have a fragmented sense, then we had a sense that principle has an idea, that's all. Then we didn't have to think about these fragments. But then, if we have been thinking that way, and naturally we have been thinking that way to a great extent, we have really seen that idea is not certain characteristics of principle, but is principle's own expression of itself, principle's own image of itself, which is much bigger. That God expresses in man the infinite idea. It's an infinite idea. But this infinite idea is not static. It's that dynamic which just transmutates and overforms and superforms and ultraforms, says forever developing itself. Ever developing itself. Well, development means that it changes and changes and changes. Hasn't there something fixed attached to it? That it broadens and rises higher and higher from a boundless basis. We always get again and again this breadth and height of the operational sense of what idea is. In no case did say that harmony is idea, that dominion is idea, that identity is idea, that substance is idea, or anything like that. She says idea is harmonious, the idea has dominion, that the idea is intelligent, that the idea is substantial, it has all those qualities, that idea, which we perhaps were pinpointing as ideas. She says that mind presents its idea of God, first in light, then changes the very same idea in reflection, then it changes, in third, in immortal form, plural, of beauty and goodness. There is a whole structure involved in this idea of God. Mind governs the multiplication of the compound idea man. So we have a compound idea man, and on top of that, the multiplication of it. Not just the compound idea, but the multiplication of it. She says that the intelligent individual idea rising from the lesser to the greater unfolds the infinitude of God. The idea unfolds the infinitude of God. It doesn't just unfold one aspect of God. The infinitude of God. She says, resurrection is a new and higher idea of immortality. Apparently there must be an old and a lower idea of immortality, or there couldn't be a newer and higher if there wasn't an older and lower idea of immortality. Indicating again that the idea of immortality is an idea which has all sorts of higher and lesser and broader forms, and only that makes up the idea. She speaks about the new idea in that obstetrics, its beginning will be meek. Apparently an idea can be at one time meek, and another time in its operational sense it can be sturdy, its growth sturdy, and its maturity undecaying. What I wanted to point out with this really is, you see, that when Mrs. Eddy speaks actually of idea, that she speaks of idea as structure, more than structure, as a self-operative, self-organizing, self-controlling, self-error-eliminating idea. So that if we can see that, we really catch up with what's going on also in the material universe. That over and over, wherever we read, in biology, in physics, or wherever, that in all these sciences, they come out from that atomistic sense of finding that their subject is constituted of individual, crystal clear, defined, uniform elements. Matter is just no more matter, it's structure. A biological cell is just no more a biological cell, it is a cybernetic information of the DNA, I think you say. And so, I think it's only good for us to see that that important term, idea, especially when used in the singular, God and his idea, mind and mind's idea, that that idea, at least when it is put in the singular, let me make that reservation so as not to expose myself too much, when she puts it into the singular as mind's idea, then she means really mind's idea. That it is the image which mind has about mind. And naturally that image, because mind stands for the infinite one, is a whole cybernetic idea. That's why mind does everything in that chart. That's why spirit does everything in that chart. That the idea of soul does everything in that chart. That's why mind can be applied to everything, to the level of science itself, namely mind knowing itself, to the level of divine science, mind knowing itself, out of itself, and through itself, and as itself, and for itself. That's already a very big idea, that mind knows itself from itself, and as itself, and through itself, and for the purpose of itself. And on the level of absolute Christian science, that very idea of mind says, I have infinite ideas of mind. What are these ideas of mind? They are all new cybernetic self-operative systems, again, of mind. And that idea also on the level of Christian science is mind's idea that wipes out every concept of mortal mind, because there's operational depth. It's the same idea, but it's mind's idea. And the textbook uses mostly idea only in the singular. And therefore, the singular concept of mind seems to be the most important, the biggest. If she says that the Christ is the idea of God, then we really could say, now I know what the idea of God is, Christ. That's already more definite. But what is the Christ? What on earth is the Christ? Have you ever never been cross with Mrs. Eddy? I get so often cross with Mrs. Eddy in a nice, gentle way, you know. When I take the textbook, and as a student I said, oh, she speaks about the Christ, I just wonder what she means with that Christ. It isn't Jesus that I know that she says, but what is it then? And you can read the whole textbook and you get about 50 or 100 answers what the Christ is, and each one is different. And you ask yourself, is that woman by good, has she still her senses, that she defines a term like Christ in 50 different ways which just seem to contradict to each other? Well, she had some sense. She was by her reason. But her reason, as we'll see too later on, is a higher reason than the logical thinking of our Western world. Christ. Here, what does she say? She says, Christ is the divine spirit, capitalized. All right, wonderful, it's the divine spirit. She says, Christ, the spirit of God, of life, truth, and love. Oh yes, so that divine spirit is the spirit of life, truth, and love. And as I know a little bit my levels, I say, oh, she's speaking about the Christ on the level of divine science. She says, that the Christ expresses God's spiritual eternal nature. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So it's no more the divine spirit. The Christ does something. It expresses. What? It expresses something which God has. So that's the office of the Christ. All right, but that's something else, I say to myself. And I go on and see that she says that the Christ is a true idea voicing good. Uh-huh. That divine spirit is voicing good. So it does already something. The divine message from God to men, speaking to the human consciousness. I say, oh, golly, that's something else than just the divine spirit. Or isn't it the same? Well, naturally, it is the same. But the aspect is different. It comes to me, and I experience that same Christ in a completely different form. And if I don't know my levels, I say that's something else. We should really put another term there. She goes on and says, Christ illustrates the coincidence or spiritual agreement between God and man in his image. Now, what has that to do with the first statement that Christ is the divine spirit? Now, it is suddenly the spiritual agreement between God and man, a covenant between God and man. Another place she says, Christ reconciles man to God, another covenant. The one is coming from God to man, and the other from man to God. And yet, it is always Christ. See, different aspect, but little by little I begin to see, yes, that's jolly nice, I begin to understand it, if I don't have an atomistic sense of Christ. If I have a sense of Christ as comprising the whole chart. She says, therefore, the Christ is the ideal truth that comes to heal sickness and sin. You see, first she says it expresses God's nature. And then it says, it does heal sickness and sin, which is the counterfeit of God's nature. And it says, Christ is the divine manifestation of God. I say, well, that's fine. And then it comes to the flesh. So it has an office to come right down to the flesh and to destroy incarnate error. Well, I get such a wide range of the term Christ, which she calls is the idea of God, that I must admit to myself that I cannot define idea through one term, like power, like intelligence, that I have to define idea through the whole chart. Then I know what idea is. Was that too strong? But she says, not only that Christ is the idea of God. She also calls man the idea of God. Well, apparently then she defines man again twice, very differently. One's Christ, one's man. Now what is it? It is. There is no difference because there is the identity principle which says, well, Christ is man and man is Christ, just from a different standpoint. But if idea, the idea of God, is a whole structure and a dynamic structure, a cybernetic structure, then really we could say, well, the Christ is a term which from the Bible, which comes from the Bible, but which means the very same thing as a divine cyberneter. And if man is also the idea of God, it means that each man is a cyberneter. If I put a personalizing term for cybernetics, just as we have, what have you in English, the painter and the sculptor. So we have cybernetics, and we could say then we are a cyberneter. That word isn't in the dictionary. Maybe one time it will. But for us, it is to see that cybernetics is not out there. That the idea of God is not out there. That the Christ idea is not out there, that it has an identity within us too. Therefore, I have a cyber nature. Can you see, just as we had the right to say in earlier times, I'm an idea of God. But we said it, and it worked, and we were happy. Then we said, man is a system of idea, compound idea. Man is a compound idea. And later we said, it's a calculus. It's a calculus. And so today, I think we can say, I'm a cybernetic. What else can my I, my real I, be but that which the I am is? I just wonder. Can we atomize the I am into bits and parts? Or can't we? If we can't, then the I am conceived in this present age, symbolized in this present age, it's again a symbol, as a divine cybernetics, then I am a cyberneter, a divine cyberneter. And by golly, if we begin to see that, then we lose that sense of having to do anything. Then I begin to realize that my whole consciousness as a divine cybernetic is a self-organizing system of ideas. Self-organizing system of ideas with infinite circuits, laws of infinite spiritual circuits. A cybernetic where the infinite circuits have within itself the power of watching that no error comes to me, correcting that which comes to me and putting it out, answering the right questions, putting away false problems. It all works within the divine me, the divine I. I think that's the idea of God. That's the idea man. So I want to stop here and just ask you again, be kind to me. I'm sorry, it has come so fresh that it is in the state of developing thought. It isn't something which I have thought out. It's something which just poured on me during the last 3 or 4 weeks. And as you know me, I can't keep it back. It has to get out. If it's right, it will stand. If it isn't right, it doesn't matter. If we go to a congress of any science, of medical science, of biological science, we always hear things which afterwards are not right. But therefore, we don't crucify that lecturer. We say, well, he wasn't seeing that quite right. That doesn't matter. As long as a challenge is thought and said, don't accept axioms and taboos. Rediscover your Christian Science textbook. Rediscover your fundamentals.